Remembrance of Things Past by Marcel Proust. Read by Neville Jason.
Well, having done an abridged version, I was very nervous of doing an unabridged. First of all, I thought, as a lot of people think who really are frightened to read Proust because of its length, I'm afraid I fell into exactly the same trap with regard to recording it. I thought, oh my God, it's going to take me the rest of my life. I shall never do anything else but Proust. And so I was kind of put off the idea, but gradually I thought, okay, if somebody's going to do it, I'd like it to be me. Proust is very special to me, but I was nervous about doing the unabridged version 10 years after I'd done the abridged. I was very pleased with the abridged. I'm very proud of it. And I thought, oh dear, am I going to do as good a job as I did last time? I've probably forgotten all about it. But it came back, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the recording very much. And in fact, it didn't take anything like as long as I expected it to. On the contrary, I seemed to go through it very easily and relatively quickly. Of course, now being through the other end, I think, what on earth was I worried about? But I suppose that's the same thing that anybody who's read Proust would think. They would think, why was I put off by the length? I mean, it's just such an enjoyable journey. Other challenges than just the length? Yes, because when I did the abridged version, first of all, I abridged it, so I knew exactly what I wanted to do and what I wanted to cut. And this time I was faced with a lot of material which was relatively unfamiliar because I hadn't touched it for years. When we did the original abridged version, we did it over a period of years, and it was done in a very kind of relaxed way. I didn't feel that I had the whole thing to do. So by the time I got into the studio, having abridged a section, I knew very well what I was going to read. This time, I didn't have that kind of luxury, so I hope that may benefit in some way in it coming out perhaps a bit fresher than something which has been too carefully studied. But yes, I felt a bit sometimes as if I was sailing without a rudder. Preparations for the long sentences? No, I don't do any special preparations for the long sentences. The long sentences take care of themselves if one behaves like a musician and phrases them. They need phrasing, that's all. They don't need a particularly long breath. Some of them do, but then some shorter sentences need a long breath. That's a question of technique. One's technique has been in use for so long now, it's really part of your body. So that's not a problem. The only problem is seeing through to the end of the sentence, knowing where the parabola is going to lead, where the sentence is going to land. Once you know that, you know your way through. It isn't a maze anymore, it's just a journey. You take each part of the sentence, each phrase has its own music. Is it like running an ultra marathon rather than a marathon? I suppose so, but somehow a marathon suggests that you're doing the whole length all at once. Well, you're not. You're doing each book in turn. And I think people wouldn't think of Proust as being a particularly long work if it were simply that one thought of it as seven books instead of one. Yes, they're all linked together, and there's a wonderful thread that runs through them, but they are separate books. And so it's not one marathon or one ultra-marathon, it's seven runs. As to listening to Proust rather than reading him, I think that's a matter of personal preference. I mean, there are some people who don't want any kind of interpretation put on the page in front of them. And for them, audiobooks in general are just not an option. They don't want to listen, they want to read, they want to imagine it all for themselves in their own way, and that's a perfectly valid approach. But once you want a voice, a human voice, to entertain you, then the audiobook is unparalleled. None of the characters I created or I interpreted when I read the abridged version changed when reading the unabridged. It's just that there were so many more of them, so many more characters. So, of course, that again was an added hurdle, that one kept coming across people one hadn't met before and had to introduce them. And sometimes they occur in one chapter and don't occur for several chapters after that, and you have to remember how they sounded, how they spoke, when you re-meet them. So that's a bit of a problem. It's not any different from any other audiobook, but of course it's a very long book and there are hundreds of characters. I mean, if you look in the printed version, there's usually a cast list, and it goes on and on, so one has to just remember who they all are. Proust, of all writers, is discursive. He chats on, you know, he's a talkative fellow, and sometimes you think, well, you've said enough about this particular subject and we want to get on. But that's probably a modern view where we're all told we only have a concentration period of a quarter of an hour or something, which is not quite true. But we do tend these days to want things to be a bit snappier, to get on with a story. But of course, that's not his style. And if you buy Proust, you buy Proust warts and all. You buy him as he is because he's unique. The main themes of remembrance of things past are to do with time. And they're very much, in my mind, to do with one's lifespan. He starts as a young boy, the narrator, and he ends as an old man. Of course, he's not an old man as we would think of an old man, because Proust died at 51. But to himself, he seems an old man. And the people who he sees around him, he also sees as having aged and changed. And so it's a life journey through love and friendship and art, family, and trying to make sense of life. And I think that's why it's an important book. It's not overtly autobiographical, but of course it is autobiographical, and we all feel, having read it, that it's the story of our own lives. Swan's Way is the first book, and it's the beginning of the journey. And in it, we learn about the narrator, we learn about his family, and we begin his life story. It contains what a lot of people who have never read Proust know about Proust, and that is the one memorable section where he discovers the memory of his childhood through drinking tea or dipping a little cake, a madeleine, into lime flower tea and tasting that, and that brings back a whole flood of memories. And so people who've never heard of Proust will use the term Proustian or a Proustian moment because of this passage, which is in Swan's Way. And that, for many people, is all they will ever know of Proust. Of course, it isn't the major theme in the book at all, but it is a very key idea which has struck a chord around the world. It's recognized everywhere, this idea of memory being brought back by a scent, by a taste, and suddenly one is transported into another time. It's like a time warp. And that's a lot to do with the theme of In Search of Lost Time, which is the French title of Remembrance of Things Past, our English version. In Search of Lost Time, he is in search of lost time in two senses. One of them is he's trying to make up for lost time, all the time he wasted when he knew he was an artist and a writer and yet couldn't get down to writing the life's work that he knew he had to write, and lost time in the sense of time past, so that this sense of the Proustian moment, this inrush of memories that comes back with a scent, with a taste, and transports one into the past, means that you have actually shifted your whole being into another time. It's a time warp. And that's really the key to Swan's Way.